Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 496, titled Triumph of the Shill, Part 5, Update on the Gruppenfuhrer. This is being recorded on January 23rd of the year 2005. Remember, websites, spitfirelist.com, that's the website of the CD duplication service that stocks all of the programs and lectures I've done over the years, in the For the Record section at www.spitfirelist.com, long written annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs, usually up within a couple of weeks of the airing of the broadcast. Books, Paul Manning's vitally important and suppressed Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, available in PDF and in HTML. Links to all kinds of other websites, including two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that are archiving the For the Record programs in real audio. More recent programs are streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows are available for download only, also on real audio, at a longer URL that's linked to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. By the way, the Spitfire website now features the most recently recorded pair of half-hour segments in both real audio and now in MP3, which are consistent with the iPods and similar types of devices. Also, be aware that on the Spitfire website, there's a page to click on for information about how to support the work that I'm doing. And frankly, there is no more important act that somebody could take, in my opinion. Now, to the subject material of the broadcast. This is another program about Governor Schwarzenegger, or Governor Schwarzenazi, as I call him. This, once again, is Triumph of the Shill, Part 5. Schwarzenegger right now is California's problem. It remains to be seen if he becomes America's problem. There is a move afoot now to make Arnold Schwarzenegger a presidential candidate. That would require an amending of the Constitution. Remains to be seen if that happens. One part of me says that the American people are too xenophobic to change the Constitution to allow a foreign-born person to run. On the other hand, I wouldn't have believed an awful lot of what I've seen so far, and the Republicans and their allied interests control the media, they control the voting machines, which are crooked, they control just about everything, and the White House, both houses of Congress, and the judiciary, and I wouldn't discount the possibility that Arnold could be a Republican candidate in 2008 or perhaps thereafter. Again, I'm of two minds on that. It remains to be seen what exactly happens. However, as I said, he's now California's problem. He's now in charge of the sixth largest economy and the sixth largest republic on earth, California. And he may become America's problem as well. So for those of you who are not living in California, and many of the people who hear this program aren't, beware, because he may very well become America's problem, and if he becomes America's problem, then he's going to become the world's problem. In particular, I encourage people who follow these programs from Europe to visit the Spitfire website and please examine this information, including the unaltered picture from Sports Illustrated of 12/7/87 with Arnold Schwarzenegger very deliberately posed giving the Nazi salute. It says a lot about how far this country has sunk that a guy who can be photographed in an internationally distributed glossy magazine giving the Nazi salute and who can openly praise Hitler could be glossed over. This isn't seen as an important thing. So it goes, I guess one could say. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at my prognostications about what a Schwarzenegger gubernatorial administration would be from For the Record program 422. That was recorded on August 25th of the year 2003, shortly after Arnold Schwarzenegger announced he was running for governor. Now, two things to note. First of all, note what seems to have been the genesis point for Schwarzenegger's gubernatorial campaign, and that was a meeting that he had at the Peninsula Hotel in May of 2001 with Ken Lay, the head of Enron, and also Mayor Richard Reardon of Los Angeles. This was to discuss Schwarzenegger's running for governor in order to sidetrack the $9 billion class action suit that had been filed by the state of California and our Lieutenant Governor Cruz Bustamante, and he filed that lawsuit at this time. Schwarzenegger and Lay, Ken Lay's Enron firm, and the allied Bush administration had a lot to do with the deliberate destabilization of the state of California. I talked about that in For the Record 280 and number 420 as well, noting that Schwarzenegger was obviously in bed with and a tool of the very special interests he professes to oppose. I then followed the account of Schwarzenegger's meeting with Lay and Reardon at the Peninsula Hotel with a discussion of Arnold Schwarzenegger's bodybuilding career. Since he had no political track record per se, I've observed that the best way to judge what a California administration under Schwarzenegger would be like would be to look at how he conducted himself in his previous professional affairs. And in one word, that conduct would be Machiavellian. Schwarzenegger is adept at and has for a long time been leading people in one direction and then sticking it to them by going in the exact opposite direction from what he had said. And that basically is what has been taking place in California. First, let's go back to August 25th, 2003. For the Record 422, True Lies, More About Conan the Republican. This is what I said we should look at in order to predict what a Schwarzenegger governorship should be. This article by Jason Leopold reads in part as follows. Arnold Schwarzenegger isn't talking. The Hollywood action film star and California's GOP gubernatorial candidate in the state's recall election has been unusually silent about his plans for running the Golden State. He hasn't yet offered up a solution for the state's $38 billion budget deficit, an issue that largely got more than 1 million people to sign a petition to recall Governor Gray Davis. More important, however, Schwarzenegger still won't respond to questions about why he was at the Peninsula Hotel in Beverly Hills 2 years ago, where he, former Los Angeles Mayor Richard Reardon and junk bond king Michael Milken met secretly with former Enron chairman Kenneth Lay, who was touting a plan for solving the state's energy crisis. Again, Schwarzenegger and Kenneth Lay. Skipping down. While Schwarzenegger, Reardon, and Milken listened to Lay's pitch, Governor Davis pleaded with President George Bush to enact much-needed price controls on electricity sold in the state, which skyrocketed to more than $200 per megawatt hour. Davis said that Texas-based energy companies were manipulating California's power market, charging obscene prices for power and holding consumers hostage. Bush agreed to meet with Davis at the Century Plaza Hotel in West Los Angeles on May 29, 2001, 5 days after Lay met with Schwarzenegger to discuss the California power crisis. At the meeting, Davis asked Bush for federal assistance, such as imposing federally mandated price caps to rein in soaring energy prices. But Bush refused, saying California legislators designed an electricity market that left too many regulatory restrictions in place, and that's what caused electricity prices in the state to skyrocket. It was up to the governor to fix the problem, Bush said. However, Bush's response appears to be part of a coordinated effort launched by Lay to have Davis shoulder the blame for the crisis. It worked. According to recent polls, a majority of voters grew increasingly frustrated with the way Davis handled the power crisis. Schwarzenegger has used the energy crisis and missteps by Davis to bolster his standing with potential voters. While Davis took a beating in the press, some energy companies ran attack ads against the governor. Lay used his political clout to gather support for deregulation. A couple of weeks before Lay met with Schwarzenegger in May of 2001, the PBS News program Frontline interviewed Vice President Dick Cheney, whom Lay met with privately a month earlier. Cheney was asked by a correspondent from Frontline whether energy companies were acting like a cartel and using manipulative tactics to cause electricity prices to spike in California. No, Cheney said during the Frontline interview, the problem you had in California was caused by a combination of things. An unwise regulatory scheme because they didn't really deregulate. Now they're trapped from unwise regulatory schemes plus not having addressed the supply side of the issue. They've obviously created major problems for themselves and bankrupted PGE in the process. Skipping down. The 90-minute secret meeting Lay convened took place inside a conference room at the Peninsula Hotel. Lay and other Enron representatives at the meeting handed out a four-page document to Schwarzenegger, Reardon, and Milken titled Comprehensive Solution for California, unquote, which called for an end to federal and state investigations into Enron's role in the California energy crisis, and said consumers should pay for the state's disastrous experience with deregulation through multi-billion rate increases. Another bullet point in the four-page document said, get deregulation right this time. California needs a real electricity market, not government takeovers, unquote. The irony of that statement is that California's flawed power market design helped Enron earn more than $500 million in 1 year, a tenfold increase in profits from a previous year, and its coordinated effort in manipulating the price of electricity in California, which other power companies mimicked, cost the state close to $70 billion and led to the beginning of what is now the state's $38 billion budget deficit. The power crisis forced dozens of businesses to close down or move to other states, where cheaper electricity was in abundant supply, and greatly reduced the revenue California relied heavily upon. Lay asked the participants to support his plan and lobby the state legislature to make it a law. It's unclear whether Schwarzenegger held a stake in Enron at the time, or if he followed through on Lay's request. His spokesman, Rob Stutzman, hasn't returned numerous calls for comment about the meeting. For Schwarzenegger and the others who attended the meeting, associating with Enron, particularly Ken Lay, the disgraced chairman of the high-flying energy company during the peak of California's power crisis in May of 2001, could be compared with meeting Osama bin Laden after September 11th to understand why terrorism isn't necessarily a heinous act. A person who attended the meeting at the Peninsula, which this reporter wrote about 2 years ago, said Lay invited Schwarzenegger and Reardon because the two were being courted in 2001 as GOP gubernatorial candidates. Interesting. So again, networking is the key term here, and Arnold Schwarzenegger is everything but the man of the people and the opponent of the special interests he professes to be. I would note that in terms of assessing Schwarzenegger, there are a lot of very unpleasant aspects. I personally don't care what the guy did in bed or with whom or when or how many times or what substances he ingested. That is, of course, something that would be very much of interest to the conservative Christian community that are a key element of the Republican Party. It isn't something I particularly care about because it's not really politically relevant. But what is politically relevant is Arnold Schwarzenegger's character. And Schwarzenegger is someone whose character I think could be best described as Machiavellian. This is a guy who is very intelligent, very, very far-sighted, and very PR conscious in certain respects. If he's going to stick it to you, Schwarzenegger will lead you in the opposite direction and then will stick it to you after that. In fact, even in his handling of the publicity anticipating his throwing his hat into the ring, characteristically, if one examines Schwarzenegger's history, he led people with what in football is called a misdirection play. His aides were announcing that he probably was not going to be running for a governor, and that this was not something that he was probably going to do, that his family was against it, and yet, surprise, surprise, not surprising to people who are familiar with Schwarzenegger, he did in fact announce his candidacy. This is something that Schwarzenegger is expert at doing, namely misleading people and then using psychological warfare to undermine them and gain triumph. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, August 15th of 2003, in which Chronicle movie critic Mick LaSalle discussed the documentary which launched Arnold Schwarzenegger's media career, namely Pumping Iron, and how the film itself has some very interesting aspects, reveals some very interesting aspects of Schwarzenegger's personality. And I would add that these are absolutely relevant if one is to make an intelligent decision about this man as a political candidate. If he were just a film star, it would be irrelevant, but this is absolutely relevant for someone who is going to be representing, quote, the people, unquote. Chronicle 8:15, 2003, Mick LaSalle, after discussing various aspects of the quasi-documentary Pumping Iron. This article is titled Film Probes Beyond Muscles, subtitled Pumping Iron Reveals Young, Brash, Even Scary Schwarzenegger. The article reads in part as follows. The genuinely creepy moments come two-thirds in. In one scene, he brags about missing his father's funeral in order to train for a competition. Talking about his chief rival, Lou Ferrigno, who went on to become TV's Incredible Hulk, Schwarzenegger tells the documentary camera, quote, "It doesn't matter if he's in shape or out of shape," unquote. He plans on messing with his mind, quote, "I will mix him up. He will come so ready, but the next morning, he will be ready to lose," unquote. Of this form of psychological manipulation, he says again, quoting, "All these things are available, and so if they're available, you might as well use them," unquote. He smiles, and at this point, he looks downright sinister. The movie shows him putting his strategy to work on the morning of the competition. He has breakfast with Ferrigno and Ferrigno's parents and subtly undermines his friend's confidence. Behind a mask of affability, he says that Ferrigno, who is huge, would have had a better chance of winning with another month's training, quote, "A month from now would be perfect for you," unquote. He asks Ferrigno, quote, "You look kind of worried today," unquote. He consoles Ferrigno in advance for losing. Finally, he gets up from the table and tells Ferrigno's father, quote, "Help him pump up, calm him down," unquote. By the end of the breakfast, poor Ferrigno looks tied up in a psychological knot. At the competition, we see him posing as though apologetic about his body when he could just as easily have won. Even after the competition, Schwarzenegger, clearly having fun, continues his barrage, riding on a bus with Ferrigno and his folks, talking about how he plans to come to New York, eat spaghetti, and date Ferrigno's sister. Everything said with a smile, but the whole time he seems to be laughing at this guileless, sweet family. Frankly, it's almost sickening. Quote, "I was always dreaming about very powerful people, dictators and things like that," unquote, Schwarzenegger says of his childhood early in the film, again quoting, "Pumping Iron makes it plain that this is one fellow who had the will to power at an early age." Indeed, Schwarzenegger had apparently confided to associates that he had planned on wielding power a long time ago. Now, of Schwarzenegger's Machiavellian character and his use of deliberately deceptive tactics, we're going to turn to, once again, Arnold, the unauthorized biography by Wendy Lee, published in hardcover in 1990 by Congdon and Weed. And more about Schwarzenegger's misleading of people who he plans to best in competition. In August of 1980, Arnold, now known in the bodybuilding community chiefly as CBS commentator and along with Jim Lorimer, producer of bodybuilding shows, attended the Miss Olympia contest at the Philadelphia Sheraton. Rick Wayne, there to cover the show for a Weeder magazine, interviewed Arnold afterward. Casually, Rick asked Arnold, who had now been retired from bodybuilding for 5 years, if he would ever consider making a comeback. "No," Arnold said firmly, "no amount of money could tempt me out of retirement," unquote. The only reason he'd been training, he told Rick, was that he was rehearsing for his part as bodybuilder Mickey Hargitay in the upcoming The Jane Mansfield Story. As an aside, he mentioned that he was planning to be in Australia for the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest, having just been signed by CBS as commentator for the event. Rick, ending the interview, believed every word that Arnold had said. Meanwhile, back on the West Coast, the reigning of Mr. Olympia, Frank Zane, had suffered a severe setback. 8 weeks before the contest, in which he expected to win his fourth Mr. Olympia title, Frank met with a terrible accident that almost killed him. After a spell in the hospital, on the verge of withdrawing from the contest, Frank approached Arnold and asked his advice. The accident, he said, had weakened him, interrupted his training, and left its mark. Should he still compete in the 1980 Mr. Olympia, or back out of the whole thing? Arnold, whom Frank habitually viewed as a friend and coach, thought for a moment then said that he strongly believed that Frank should go to Australia and defend his Mr. Olympia title. As an afterthought, Frank, a man who was nobody's fool and had been Arnold's friend for more than 12 years, casually asked him if he planned to compete. No, said Arnold. He was going to Australia to do a documentary, to do commentary on the Olympia for CBS. That was all. Skipping ahead, 2 weeks before the 1980 Mr. Olympia, Arnold fell ill, losing 10 pounds. That didn't deter him from giving an interview to Austrian journalist Roman Schließer, who wrote about Arnold on a regular basis in his column, A Dabei, for the Viennese paper Die Kronen Zeitung. And if Mentzer, Zane et al. Had subscribed to Die Kronen Zeitung and had been fortunate enough to understand German, they would not have been at all surprised by the events that took place subsequently in Sydney, Australia. For Arnold had quite openly revealed to Schließer, quote, On October 4th, the next Mr. Olympia will be chosen in Sydney. I'm a sports commentator for CBS television, but I'm doing it. I've trained for 6 weeks. I'm competing against Frank Zane, who was Mr. Olympia 3 times, but they will all cry when I win again, unquote. Schließer's article was published on September 28th, just 6 days before Arnold dropped his bombshell on the 1980 Mr. Olympia contest. Then it discusses some interesting psychological warfare that was waged against Mike Mentzer, who was one of the competitors for Arnold Schwarzenegger in this particular contest. Skipping down, Frank Zane was Arnold's next target. A year later, Arnold described his tactics in an interview, quote, I knew Frank Zane would be tense at the moment of the competition because he hadn't laughed once in the last 6 weeks. So if I could crack him up with a good joke, all the laughter that he had stored up would come out in a torrent. So I prepared a joke and told it to him during the prejudging. He cracked up so much that he leaned back and bent over, and of course the judges are always looking and making notes. They probably thought, he is not taking this seriously, unquote. After 5 years away from competition, it was wonderful to use psychological warfare again, unquote. In interviews filmed for The Comeback, conducted before and during the contest, Arnold would allege that he was insecure about stepping on stage for the first time in 5 years, but as he began to pose to the strains of Exodus, he enthused that nothing had changed. Waiting for the results, he was exultant, overflowing with enthusiasm and self-confidence, impatient to hear the outcome of the 1980 Mr. Olympia, convinced that he had won. As Dan Howard, one of the 1980 judges, says, quote, Arnold beats people before they go on stage, unquote. He was right. Although Arnold had trained for only 8 weeks while all the other contestants had trained for a year, he was nevertheless declared the 1980 Mr. Olympia. The audience went wild, though not in the way to which Arnold was accustomed. Paul Graham, executive producer of The Comeback with the help of film editor Jeff Bennett, didn't include in the film's soundtrack the subsequent eruption that greeted the announcement of the 1980 Olympia winner. In the words of an eyewitness, quote, the audience was furious, throwing things, swearing. A great chorus of rigged, rigged, rigged flared up. There's never been anything like it in any bodybuilding contest forever. Everyone in the place was booing Arnold, shouting, Bull, S blank, 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 and brawling in disgust. Arnold was enraged and went red in the face. Seething with anger, Arnold stormed out of the Sydney Opera House with a group of reporters in hot pursuit. Almost running toward the exit, he avoided answering their questions, tossing his head in a combination of anger and disdain. Close to the exit, he suddenly realized that Maria, far from being by, that's by the way, is Maria Shriver, currently his wife. Close to the exit, he suddenly realized that Maria, far from being by his side, was talking to some reporters behind him. According to Helmut Cernchich, at the top of his voice, Arnold screamed, quote, You stupid B.I. blank, 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 I'm waiting for you. Come here, unquote. Witnessing the scene, Helmut, who had known Arnold almost since he was a teenage misfit all those years ago in the athletic union, thought to himself, quote, This boy from Austria, who never had a penny, couldn't speak English, now knows someone from the Kennedy family and speaks to her like that. It was amazing, unquote. And skipping down yet again, The attitudes towards Arnold's Olympia victory were many and varied. Some declared that he'd been out of shape, that his legs wouldn't even have won him a Mr. Australia title. Others felt that, compared to the rest of the consultants, yes, Arnold had been in shape, that he'd been far below his own best form, skipping down. Among the more serious allegations was the one claiming that all the judges in the 1980 Mr. Olympia either were Arnold's friends or had business relationships with him. And although no one accused the IFBB of having fixed the contest in Arnold's favor, it seemed as if the judges had had eyes only for him. And so again, one should note as we assess Arnold Schwarzenegger that this is a guy who definitely knows how to lead people in one direction and then snap back in the other, something that people should be very careful about as they assess him as a politician. That's what I had to say on August 25th of the year 2003. His political genesis is at one with the very special interests he professes to oppose, and he is Machiavellian, leading people in one direction, sticking it to them by going in the exact opposite direction from what he said he would do. Let's take a look at what Schwarzenegger has done in the meantime. Editorial from the San Jose Mercury News of Wednesday, November 17th of 2004, titled, A Solid Term So Far, But Still Incomplete. This is characteristic of the soft treatment Schwarzenegger has received from the media. But skipping down, we read, where Schwarzenegger has not even begun to change, quote, the political climate of our state, unquote, as he promised a year ago, is in special interest money in Sacramento. He's swimming in the ocean of it, just like his predecessors and the legislature. Nor has he run government with the windows and doors open as he vowed to do. Only this week did he promise to release his calendar so the public could see who has been meeting with him. And I would note in that regard more about his lack of transparency. First of all, note that he is awash in special interest money more than any of his predecessors, and still more as this guy begins to blow up boxes, as he says, and posit himself as a Führer. San Jose Mercury News, 1-9-2005, article by Ann E. Marimo, Dateline Sacramento, Governor Dumps Deals, Creates Mistrust. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's success during his first year relied on cutting deals and sharing the stage with unlikely allies. But after his State of the State speech sounded like an expiration notice on many of these agreements, one-time allies are left wondering, how good is the governor's word? Negotiators who reached compromises with Schwarzenegger over public schools, retirement benefits for state workers, and a balanced budget amendment say they are now wary of working with the governor as they head into the budget talks this week. Quote, it's not credible when you walk away from an agreement that's barely a year old, unquote, said Kevin Gordon, executive director of the California Association of School Business Officials. Well, surprise, surprise, says Dave. Point of fact, obviously I'm being facetious. There is absolutely no reason to suspect that this guy would have done anything else. It's what he's done his whole life. He did it to Lou Ferrigno in Pumping Iron. What the hell makes you think he isn't going to do it to California or perhaps America? We shall see. Remember, sister station WFMU archiving the For the Record shows on Real Audio. More recent shows streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available at a longer URL for download only, also on Real Audio. That's linked to both the previously enunciated WFMU website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. We're going to continue with more of Arnold Schwarzenegger's deliberate Machiavellian deceptions, quote, true lies, unquote, in side two of this program. This, however, wraps up side one of For the Record program number 496, Triumph of the Shill, part five, update on the Gruppenführer. This has been recorded on January 23rd of the year 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.